I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal, bringing you the news that you need. Not propaganda, not the dictated narrative, not fake news, but principle, constitution. We are a teach show, not a talk show. And I have with me today my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. You know, I was going through the research for today's show, and is it surprising to you, dear, that this hysteria over Kavanaugh's nomination is not subsiding?
No, not really.
I mean, seriously, it's not going to subside until November, is it? Because the hysteria is all about getting people to the ballots in November.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, here's something good that's actually happening. And, of course, Politico is talking about it because it drives the hysteria narrative. Apparently, because of Kavanaugh, or at least Politico draws this conclusion, anti-abortion initiatives are on the ballot in several states, West Virginia and Alabama being two. So they have these initiatives on the ballot this November, and Politico is tying the connection with these initiatives to the fact that the Supreme Court is undergoing change. Well, I would simply say that this is something that the states ought to have been doing from the get-go. Because remember, Roe v. Wade is a Supreme Court opinion. It is not the law of the land. And as a Supreme Court opinion, Roe v. Wade only binds Roe and Wade. And maybe anybody else who is brought into that case, you know, they don't always list all the plaintiffs, all the defendants in that case. But Roe v. Wade, the point that I'm trying to make here is that Roe v. Wade only affects the people in that case. And if we have states that are supposed to be contrary to that think and operate contrary to the opinions of the Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade, they should have been creating their own initiatives and then driving their own cases. And so what I see here is maybe just a resurgence of some kind of, I don't know, idea of renewed sovereignty. Right? So maybe because we have the Supreme Court who might be on our side, then we'll go forward with this. Now, you have to believe that these anti-abortion initiatives, you have to know, because you know the legislative process. If they're on the ballot in November, they were put forward before Kavanaugh was even brought forward to the bench, right?
Yeah.
Or, well, he's not even on the bench yet, right? He's just a nomination. But they had to, that kind of legislation, that kind of movement doesn't happen overnight. And so that stuff had to have been in the works before Kavanaugh was even nominated. And frankly, there's no guarantee that Kavanaugh will be actually appointed or even appointed by November. I suspect that the Democrats will sit. You don't think they'll sit that long, do you?
Who's that?
Kavanaugh, on his appointment.
No, I Who knows?
Yeah, right. Well, I think they're gonna draw this out and play this game.
Well, they want to, yeah. But I mean, I you know, it's hard to say. I mean, you had the, you know, bringing all the deputy attorney generals and or whatever to trying to review all this stuff. And
well, the crazy thing is, if you look at the Democrat left side of this hysteria, you would think that Kavanaugh was being nominated for emperor instead of one of nine Supreme Court justices.
Well, they know how they use the court, so maybe they're afraid of the very thing that they've been doing.
Well, here's the thing, though. Even with Kavanaugh, even if Kavanaugh was staunchly set to overturn Roe v. Wade, which we have absolutely no indication that he is. I mean, he is pro-Obamacare, so there are some other things that we simply don't know about him. Even if he were going to overturn Roe v. Wade, it is practically impossible for that to happen with this Supreme Court, because we have five justices who are fairly set in their opinion and their perspective of Roe. What I would like to see, however, I would like to see these issues come back to the Supreme Court for review. I think that this is great what West Virginia and Alabama is doing, renewing these issues that would force the Supreme Court to actually rehear these things. Because remember, I don't know, most people think that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land and you know, that's that. But even in Roe, the justices in the majority opinion said that if science can prove to us that life, that viability begins at an earlier stage, then we should have a different opinion. Well, because of this errant way we look at Supreme Court opinions being the Roe v. Wade kind of law of the land mentality, these issues have never been readdressed. The Supreme Court has never brought before them to engage in this new argument. Can science have a baby live outside the womb before a certain stage? I mean, science has advanced.
Yeah.
So I would like to hear them see them create this or at least have to review this whole process again from a real scientific perspective. Because I wrote an article about the inalienable right to life at chrisannhall.com. And you all know that I'm a former prosecutor, former constitutional law attorney. I've had cases in the courtroom. And after reading Roe, I understand that it was not, and also my undergraduate degree was in biochemistry. I was a biochemist and a biologist for a very long time before I even went to law school. And so knowing these kind of things, I know that Roe was not decided on science, that Roe was decided on politics, bad legal argument, and just simply errant application of what would be called pseudoscience today. So I would love to see that reopened so people who have been preparing for this argument for decades could have a way to put forward some kind of amicus brief and be heard before the Supreme Court.
Well, that's really the argument. It's not, I don't think anybody, well, no reasonable person, I think looks at this as Roe v. Wade's going to be overturned. It's a matter of, I think it's a matter of it being restricted. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see all these state moves on the state level to restrict, add these restrictions, some of which have been, you know, overturned, quote unquote. So I see you see a push for those again. Maybe the, goodness, what do you call it? The those amendments defining what life is, or what
right.
Personhood amendments.
Personhood amendments.
So you see those and the different restrictions and. You know, the talk is now that now Roberts, because you kind of have four now. So it's 5-4 for abortion. So it could be, you know, they're saying, what's his name? Kavanaugh mm-hmm. would be pr- probably the more strongly pro-life, and then Roberts actually would become the swing guy because he's the stare decisis, you know, the
right,
precedent guy.
Right.
He's more concerned about maintaining precedent than some of the others. And so I don't think Kavanaugh. This is almost to miss the point, I think. So the focus is on Kavanaugh. I don't think he's really the question. And so that's why the fight against him, because they think Kavanaugh is a given pro-life, and then Roberts is going to be the one to look at. So it turns the court into a potential swing, you know, swing toward, or let's say a swing away from abortion, not necessarily overturning it, but a court that would not be so hostile to restrictions as this court has been in the past. So I think that's really what's going on here.
What I would like to see is an opinion by Gorsuch get in the line that he's been in late, you know, in the previous opinions is, hey, there's no delegation of authority to the federal government to even define life. So this is not within our jurisdiction to even review this case. This is a state issue. This is a matter that involves people within the state and their own state. And frankly, we have to maintain our distance from such an issue.
Yeah, I think if somebody's going to write an opinion that goes, you know, directly at it, he's going to be the one.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. I would like to encourage our listeners to go to chrisannhall.com and read the article called The Inalienable Right to Life, where I talk about these issues not only from a 10th Amendment perspective, but from the scientific versus legal application of Roe v. Wade, and in my humble opinion, how the whole matter should really be handled. Once again, chrisannhall.com, chrisannhall.com, and the article is called The Inalienable Right to Life. I'm excited, maybe I'm just curious, maybe I'm just amused at the internal strife in the Democratic Party. I'm absolutely more excited at the fact that the Democrats are snubbing Dianne Feinstein. Did you see that article?
I did
in,
not.
In the Washington Post? Well, apparently the California Democrat Party is snubbing Dianne Feinstein and handing an official endorsement to her Democrat challenger. We'll talk about that one on the other side. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show Daily Journal, where we give you the daily news that you need to hear, not from the dictated narrative, a teach show and not a talk show. So apparently, according to the Washington Post, the California Democratic Party snubbed U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein on Saturday by handing its official endorsement to Senator Kevin DeLeon, her long-shot Democratic challenger. I'm excited because, first off, this is even according to the Washington Post, this is a move even of the Democrat Party to turn its back on these people who have been in government way too long. According to the Washington Post, even the Democrats want a fresh face.
Well, you have to remember that I think look at the reaction of the Democrat Party when Hillary Clinton lost. Their general idea, their reaction is, we are not radical enough. we're not left enough. We're not progressive enough. Mm-hmm. So I think you're going to continue to see these trends, as radical as we think somebody like Dianne Feinstein is.
Right.
They're going to move even further left of people like her. And then I think to their argument, I really think, again, even as radical as Feinstein and some of these folks were, I really believe, and I guess would probably agree with the Democrats, though I don't agree with their positions, I'd agree with their analysis of this. Some of these people like Feinstein, a lot of it was lip service. When it comes right down to it, they play to the radical base, but then they play establishment party politics because it's about maintaining the power, and they have a cabal in there. But the ultimate result is they move farther and farther left. And I think that's good for those of us who love liberty, because I sincerely see the Democratic Party destroying itself. I don't think the extreme radicalism of the far left in the Democrat Party is the majority view in America. So I think they make themselves more fringed. They become more obviously unhinged. They become more obviously radical. And continue to push the boundaries of immorality and craziness.
Well,
so
even the Washington Post, says that they're looking for a more progressive senator.
Right.
And the quote, once again, that comes to my mind of Hannah Winthrop is people maddening on to their own destruction. I think that it's ironic that the Democrats have been using the educational system to create these uber progressive Marxist generations.
Absolutely.
And now the very product that they're creating is against the people who have funded their creation.
Yeah, and I do believe it's, don't get me wrong, I think it's a threat. I think it's a major threat. The Marxist indoctrination centers that we call public schools and universities are a major threat
Absolutely.
To liberty. But I think it makes them more obvious. It makes them more apparent. They can't hide behind reasonableness any longer. Look at the people that they hire, the people that are the out front spokesmen. The people that are their presidential nominee, Barack Obama, mm-hmm. who was, radical, communist member. Family members, communist parties, card-carrying communist parties, put into politics by Bill Ayers, domestic terrorist. So this has been a long train. I think they're finally really accentuating what they believe and basically coming out in the open. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because in the sense of combating that, because now you can point to it in a clearer way. You can take what they do, what they say, and it's very clear. There's no more obfuscation. There's no more trying to hide it. There's no more trying to code it. These guys are full out, out in the open Marxists. They brag on socialism, communism, Marxism. They don't think it's a big deal.
And I think that's,
so now you have something to point to.
Yeah, and I think that is also, like you said, a good thing. It creates a division, greater distinction. That's the word that I was looking for, a greater distinction. Because, like you said, the majority of Americans understand that this degree of socialism that these new Democrats are looking for cannot survive as soon as you run out of somebody else's money.
There again, men tear up our constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution. Standing together and without permission, soldiers for truth in the war of attrition, the love of our country as our
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Oh, but I'm only a stranger here. I'm a long, long way from my home. And I'm going to change all the things I find strange. For
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show Daily Journal. Daily Journal bringing you Monday through Thursday the news that you need, not the news that you are hearing. And I embrace this new distinction being created by the Democrat Party, these new Democrats that are coming forward that are the product of the establishment Republicans in these Marxist educational indoctrination camps. But I also embrace it because I know that it's driving our parents to homeschool.
Correct.
It's driving our parents to get more involved in where their children go to school.
And that's important to understand because this freaks people out. We run into people like, I think somebody emailed you just last week and, you know, I love your show, but I got to increase my blood pressure medicine and seeing what all this. So we travel all over the place. We've seen for the last, at least 2 to 3 years,
mm-hmm.
we've watched this continued expansion of young people enter into the liberty movement. We've seen a massive expansion of, as you mentioned, the homeschool movement and people educating their own children. So there is a rise. Like people try to talk sort of, how would you call it, monolithically
mm-hmm.
about the millennials.
Right.
And that's usually characterized by, you know,
snowflakes.
The snowflakes, the Marxist idealism, you know, and they all want free everything that the country can't afford, that somebody else needs to pay for. But from our perspective, we have traveled the country from coast to coast, corner to corner, all over, everywhere in between. And we've seen just thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of millennials that are what I call counter millennials, the counterculture to these Marxist millennials, that they are liberty minded. Young people, they're engaged, they're on college campuses, they're fighting back, they're starting groups, they're out in the forefront. And so I like the fact that there is a distinction. In other words, I like the fact when these radical Democrats are honest, when they come out and say, we need to be more progressive, we need more radicals, we need more free stuff, we need more Marxism. I like when they're honest because then you can deal with what they're saying and who they are. Be who you are. And that, you know, makes them an easier target to then contrast their ideas and their policies with the alternative liberty-centered policies and policies that, you know, would lift people not put people in bondage.
Do you think we could actually get a generation of people who would be honest and say, we don't want to operate under this Constitution anymore. We want to be an extra constitutional government, because that's exactly what the majority of the politicians in Washington, D.C. are doing.
It's what they believe.
It's what they believe.
Yeah.
I believe that's what at least 4 out of 5 Supreme Court justices believe.
Yeah. And you're right. You're right about that. Most of them are not honest about that point yet.
And I'm talking Democrat and Republican.
Yeah.
When you have, I talk about him just because he's the only one who's actually said to me, to my face, Tim Walberg says that the only limit to congressional authority is what we can pass by a majority vote.
And he's known as a conservative.
He's a Republican.
But the
and
Democrats,
so that's his declaration that no, I don't believe we should operate by the Constitution.
Yeah. But the Democrats, for sure, right? So they obviously don't accept the principles mm-hmm. of the Constitution or what the principles that upon which the Constitution are based. But they are, at this point, most of them, not honest about it. However, there are some who are. There are segments of the Democrat Party and Democrat voters who say we need to get rid of this Constitution. We hate it. It doesn't work. It's racist, etc. So there is that segment out there. So I do think there will be maybe a move right now. You hear more of them invoking the Constitution because they hate Donald Trump. They mm-hmm. want to use they want to try, if they can, to use constitutional principles against him. And so I have to laugh once again. It's like Donald Trump catches them in a trap, you know, that he laid for them. Right. Because they're anti-Constitution up till the point now that Trump is on the scene and they've been unwittingly put in a position to have to say we support the Constitution, you know, even though they're doing it in order to defeat Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. Once again, I get, you know, it's like the Wile E. Coyote chasing Ray Roadrunner, and they end up in their own trap. So that is kind of funny. But I think, you know, when he's gone, when he's no longer president, yeah, perhaps we'll get a more honest group that will be honest about the fact that they want to get rid of the Constitution. And again, I think that runs along the same lines. It gives you an opportunity to then debate that issue. Right now, they're not honest about the
issue. Right. They just do it circumvent it. They're underhanded about the whole thing. Yeah. And I think, again, as these progressive, as this Marxist generation comes into its age of power, then we will have an even stronger distinction apparent in America, and people who have been taught the Constitution, you know, through our teaching, through others who are teaching the true application of the Constitution, and parents who have been raising their children with a liberty mindset, this distinction is going to really create a battle line that people will stand up. And anytime you have that real battle going on, then you have discussion, and then you have people who are able to see one side or the other. Right now, you can't see that side because, part of the problem that we have sometimes is that because I am an equal opportunity critic, that all of the sudden, if I criticize someone who happens to be a Republican or happens to be a loved conservative, but criticize their anti-constitutional stance or voting or operation, then I'm attacked, right? Yeah. Because I'm attacking that person. And
yeah, the blind party loyalty and the tribalism, it is very destructive to our republic. I look forward to the day that we make inroads in that, and that becomes less of a strong characteristic of the American people, particularly conservatives. I don't. That's not helpful at all.
Well, think about the fact that for years I've been trying to point out how Jeff Sessions, even as a senator, was highly
a statist.
A statist. But I'll just simply say complete, you know, highly unconstitutional. I don't want to be too speaking hyperbole and say completely, because I don't know everything that he did, but most of everything that I know that he did was completely unconstitutional.
Well, it's not that he hasn't done good things since he's been Attorney General. I mean, there have been several things that have been good, but I think on the whole, it's not. I mean, I honestly believe that he is a Hillary Clinton camp. Mm-hmm. Plant. I
well,
really do.
In the very
you're not going to talk me out of that.
No. And I don't disagree with you. But in the very least, he is an establishment big government guy. And he has been conspicuously absent in this entire Rosenstein thing, everything that's going on with this investigation. Where was Sessions when Strzok is on the testimony? We have Strzok refusing to answer questions because the FBI attorneys told him not to answer.
Yeah.
Where is Sessions, who is the head of the Department of Justice, the head of the FBI in this matter? And if we're really going to have justice on this issue, where is Sessions? Well, I'll tell you exactly where Sessions is. Sessions is sitting back, being the big government guy that he's always been. And to put forward a kind of limitation on the FBI that is being asserted, not by simply by the Congress, but by the people as well, and to condemn those individuals. I'm not condemning the FBI as a whole, but to condemn those individuals who are operating in an unethical manner that destroys the reputation of the entire FBI. Sessions should be coming out and condemning these people. This Strzok should have lost his job when he was removed from the whole investigation.
Yeah, it's strange to me. It's almost like Sessions has no ability to sort of multitask. Of course, there are talks, you know, internally about how they just sort of put him in a room and, you know, make sure he stays out of the way. But, you know, he's, it's like you see the ramping up of the drug war. You see him dealing with the immigration stuff and the border control. And it's, and you can't, I can't believe that then, you know, you could say, oh, well, he's busy doing these other things and he can't deal with this. I mean, it's your job. So it's got to be intentional. It seems to me that it's intentional of ignoring this and refusing to cooperate. I mean, he's the one. Am I wrong to say he's the one that sort of holds the keys to this?
Absolutely.
As far as complying, not complying. I don't understand how a Jeff Sessions Justice Department, you know, appointed by Donald Trump, how do you refuse to turn over documents to this investigation? How do you stonewall? I mean, that's Trump's own appointee, and he is stonewalling this concocted investigation that was crafted to target Donald Trump and get him out of the presidency. I find that mind-boggling and hard to explain, except, as I said, I believe that this guy is an infiltrator. It's a deep state, swamp rat, Hillary administration, Hillary cabal cartel infiltrator. I think that's who he is.
Well, the ridiculous thing is to think that Sessions has to do all of these things, right? To assert that he's unable to multitask because he can't handle all these issues is to assume that he's handling all the issues.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to handle all the
right.
issues. He's the
he
boss.
Leads. Exactly.
He says, you do this. You do this.
Yeah.
How many minutes would it take in an office to call in to the office the head of the Bureau of Land Management and say, prosecution, and say, we're not prosecuting any more of these cases. You need to file motions to dismiss because we're not going forward with these. How many minutes would it take to say, okay, head of the FBI, you've got to release these documents. We've got no reason to keep them. They're not part of this ongoing investigation. They're part of an investigation on ethics violations. So it's not like Jeff Sessions has to go to some office somewhere and go through all the paperwork himself. It is his job to make his people do that. And they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Man, these things go by so very quickly. I did want to mention, in light of what's going on with Jeff Sessions, that there is a move, although I'll say not as fast as I need that I would like to, there is a move to clean out the Department of Justice and the Obama-era appointees for these U.S. attorneys. Now, I say appointees of Obama, but in reality, the Senate has to appoint U.S. attorneys. So all of these quote-unquote Obama-era U.S. attorneys that have been wreaking havoc across America's private property rights were actually appointed by your senator. Once again, an appointment by the Senate stealing the liberty of the people and then turning around and pointing the finger at Barack Obama. So the Senate has confirmed 65 of Trump's U.S. attorney nominees. And when Sessions took office, Sessions asked 46 attorneys from the Obama era to resign on short notice. This was back in March of 2017. And so the people are like freaking out because never has an administration chosen to boot out so many so quickly. But I think it's because we need to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's the bottom line. The president of the United States, through the Department of Justice, has the authority, and nobody argues, to simply clean house completely. And I think that there should be 100 U.S. attorneys laid off every single month and replaced.
Well, there are 93 U.S. attorneys, and they supervise over 350 assistant U.S. attorneys
right.
in their districts apiece. So mm-hmm. you're talking over 400, almost 450 attorneys per these districts, right?
Yeah. So if you go through and you want and
or
you
300, that'd be 351,
right?
With each of these U.S. attorneys, so. What is that? Multiply that by basically 100, almost 4,000.
Right. But once again, if you replace the deputy, the U.S. attorney, but do not replace the deputies underneath them, then there is not going to be a real significant palpable change in how the government operates. My concern, however...
I'm sorry, I meant 40,000.
Yeah. My concern, however, is that these new U.S. attorneys... are being chosen based on Sessions' statists' qualifications in this new, as they call, law and order platform that he has. You remember where he said, I promise to exceed the Obama level of
civil
asset forfeiture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And obviously Sessions has not made a great effort to pull back on the federal prosecutions of farmers and ranchers.
Right.
It took Donald Trump to pardon
the Hammonds. Yeah, something that Jeff Sessions could have handled right off the bat.
Right. Not only that,
ago.
The Bundys.
Yeah.
He could have stopped. There's still Bundy prosecution going on.
Right.
He could be
Those
stopping
are his
that
attorneys
right now.
Attorneys working for him, and
right.
he's done nothing.
Absolutely. And so that's what my concern is, you have a pendulum swinging far to the left with Obama and his attorneys. Now you've got a pendulum swinging way too far to the right with Sessions' picks of U.S. attorneys.
Yeah, and it's another demonstration, though, of him working counter to the positions of the president,
mm-hmm.
right? The president pardoned the Hammonds, whereas Sessions did absolutely nothing, ignore it. In fact, some of that stuff happened under his watch, was still going on.
Right.
So.
Well, the Amish farmer was prosecuted and sentenced to prison time for the USDA didn't like his label on his salve. That happened under Sessions. I mean, this is gross.
I think the guy's a disaster.
This is gross. And the fact that we have people who are held in solitary confinement in federal prisons under Jeff Sessions.
For political reasons
is something that we need to pay attention to. I just want to remark here that, once again, just because Trump is the president doesn't mean that we need to relax, because there are infiltrators, there is the deep state, and there is still the establishment that is working contrary to the Constitution and contrary to our liberty. We'll see you tomorrow, guys. God bless.
I received. Let me know.